much older then. I'm younger than that now.
Welcome to what we humbly believe is one of the most unusual and inspiring shows on the radio, a show that shines a light on people who are living lives of purpose, passion, and adventure, and proving that it's possible for you to do it as well. It's called Growing Bolder. I'm Mark Middleton, along with Bill Schaefer. And if you'll give us just a few minutes, you'll see for yourself as we bring in world-renowned experts, best-selling authors, and people who are living extraordinary lives.
Great example, Mark, because in the next hour, remember Sissy from the show Family Affair? We'll find out how she's still going strong. And you'll hear what happened when a crazy rock band from the 60s all got back together in their 60s. And if you love George Carlin, wait until you meet his daughter and hear what she has to say about growing up Carlin. You'll hear the story of what happened to a guy who walked away from a master's degree and instead went to clown college. But the biggest name of all is coming up right now. Are you ready? It's time to start growing bolder. The following interview was recorded before the passing of our guest.
You know, if we could afford it, that could be a great Growing Bolder theme song, making our dreams come true, doing it our way. But, yeah, it's out of our reach, folks. But we can talk to one of the stars. You probably first noticed her on the big screen in American Graffiti, a classic film. But a guest appearance with Penny Marshall on the TV show Happy Days changed her life forever when it spun into a show called Laverne and Shirley.
And you know what, Mark? She has just written her life story, and it's exactly like her. It's inside. Insightful, revealing, and fascinating. It's called Shirley I Jest, A Storied Life. And we are excited to get to spend a few minutes with the woman who brought Shirley Feeney to life, Miss Cindy Williams. Cindy, how are you?
Well, I'm fine. And that would be Shirley Wilhelmina Feeney.
Absolutely. Man, oh man. And we're thrilled to have you with us. Word is, I've got to hit you with this, that for all of these years, you resisted the idea of writing a book. Why didn't you want to, and why is now the right time?
Well, Mark and Bill, it wasn't so much I resisted. It was that I didn't want to write like a tell-all or anything, you know, salacious, or I didn't want to throw anybody under the bus, and that's kind of what they wanted. So I instead wanted to write anecdotes and fun stories about my career. And that's and finally, I found a publisher that wanted to do just that.
And we're grateful you did. It may not be salacious, but it is definitely insightful. And one of the things I love about it is that when you look back at your Laverne and Shirley days, many people would say, well, that was the pinnacle of my life. But you frame it much different than that, more of a growing bolder way. You considered it a doorway to other adventures still to come. Is that what it actually turned out to be, Cindy?
Oh, absolutely. It was, you know, it opened the doors for all these stories that I tell in the book, and meeting incredible people and a chance to do wonderful comedy with a wonderful cast. And it just turned out to be win-win all the way around.
And, you know, there's something important that we hope everybody realizes is that you are proof that anything really is possible, because nobody really believes that a waitress, which is what you were, would ever have a chance at a big break like you got. What did you learn, Cindy, in your life about never giving up the dream?
I'll tell you what I learned about never giving up the dream, and it's this. Never give up the dream.
Yeah.
That's it. You just never give up, and you just keep putting one foot in front of the other, and you just keep going. And you don't say die, and you don't let things get to you. And you can't take it personally, especially in show business, when you don't get the part, or you don't, you know, or something doesn't happen to you. It's like not getting an invitation to a party. There'll be another party, and you'll get an invite to that. And you just have to keep a positive attitude. You have to in the face of everything. You can't get jealous. You can't get envious. I mean, those things, of course, happen to you. You get jealous when, you know, someone else gets a part you wanted or is nominated for something that you feel you should have been nominated for, although I never even got in that realm. But you just kind of keep your feet on the ground, but you shoot for the moon.
We're talking with the fabulous actress Cindy Williams, who is now the fabulous author as well. And it's interesting. It seems like you've always been one of these people that appreciates the journey and isn't overly worried about the destination. And the point I'm trying to get at is, as you write that when the series first got started, you and Penny Marshall weren't flooded by ego thinking, wow, we finally made it. You expected it to be a 4-episode run, and then you'd probably be back at the restaurant, and you seemed to be okay with that.
Boy, you are good. You did read that book. Yes, it's true. I both of us thought, because the network bought 4 shows to put on the air, and Penny and I both thought, well, 4 on and then we're off, and I will have made my rent for the year. And we were just so happy with that, and we never took ourselves seriously. But I do believe that that was part of the success of the show, that we never took ourselves seriously, because the characters on the show rarely took themselves seriously. I mean, they couldn't afford to, because they would have been crushed, you know, at every turn. And that was sort of the theme and the texture of the show that we tried to stay loyal to, was, you know, every man. That you just don't know what's around that next corner, but you hope it's something great.
And we related to that, Cindy, and we loved you for that. And I'd like people to know that you're still worthy of all that now, because you're in your late 60s, you're energetic, you're loud, and you're fun. So help us all.
What
because
do you mean I'm loud?
Yeah, we didn't even need to call you on the phone.
No, you didn't. I could have done this from my backyard with a megaphone.
2 tin cans and a string. But, you know,
there you go.
So how have you handled, like, the dreaded thing, especially for actresses, aging?
Not well. It sneaks up on you. It really does, because inside I'm 19. But I don't know that my, like, liver and kidneys are still 19, but I feel 19. And I know everybody else does. That's like just a common human thing as you get older. But you try and think of it as an adventure, really. I told my friends who are my age, I said, let's think about it for a minute. Isn't it like being in college again, because you don't know what's going to happen, and you're stringing everything together, all your money and everything else, your health. You know, you're trying to put it all together again, just like in college. It's sort of a mystery adventure.
It's a great way of looking at it. And, of course, Cindy, back in the day, we all remember when there were 3 channels, and that was pretty much it. And one of the cool things about today and the timeless classic that you helped create is now there's 1,000 channels, and there's always going to be one that's going to want to put Laverne and Shirley on. Do you enjoy watching your work from back in the 60s? Are you surprised that it still withstands the test of time?
Well, I know it's on MeTV right now, and because people come up to me all the time and, you know, say, oh, I just saw you girls were hung on hooks. Oh, it's so, and they're very complimentary, and it just gives you an infusion of energy and happiness, because people, well, they approach Penny and me and the whole cast with love. It's not like we played, you know, Hannibal Lecter or anything like that. So there's a lot of love for these characters, and it's just wonderful, you know, to have it out there, and it makes me feel great.
You know, Cindy, you've really a unique person, because you've seen life from a very interesting and an unusual perspective. So we got to ask you this. What can we learn from your experiences that has allowed you to continue growing bolder over the years, even after the Laverne and Shirley show? You know, what's the Cindy Williams takeaway?
Well, you always have to have a sense of fun in your life. And it is that old adage of, when you're given lemons, you make lemonade, and you do, and you just try to see the funny side of things, the lighter side of things, no matter what's going on in your life, because it'll embolden you. It will make you happy. That's a universal language, fun and laughter. And so you just always try and look at the funny side of, like you said, growing older. You know, you look at the unique and funny side as it refers to yourself. And there are unique qualities in everyone, and life just gets more and more fun and mysterious, and you just keep going and look for those happy moments, those happy themes.
There it is, a whole lot of wisdom from Shirley Feeney. The book is called Shirley, I Jest, and our guest has been the uplifting and always entertaining Cindy Williams. Thanks, Cindy. Coming up, how trading in a master's degree to become a clown turned out to be the smartest move of his life. We'll meet the Jiggle Man. Where else but on Growing Bolder?
Support for Growing Bolder provided by...
Even when we're growing bolder, we can all use a ride every now and then. Did you know that many Medicare Advantage Flex cards help cover the cost of Uber rides to appointments and important deliveries with Uber Eats like groceries and OTC medication? Learn more at uberhealth.com/card or call 1-866-827-4584.
I'm Bill Schaefer with Mark Middleton, and this is Growing Bolder. Boy, it's easy to follow your passion when you already know what it is. But here's an important point. Sometimes you have to walk a ways down the road of life before it reveals itself to you.
Yeah, Banks Helfrich didn't know what he wanted to be. Well, he thought he did, at least, until he took a chance, and it completely changed the course of his life. His story is quite unusual, but it's a great example of how everything can fall into place when you're doing what you really love.
Banks Helfrich does not have a normal job, and he never really has.
Yeah, I don't know how I do it, actually.
So how has he made it through life without one? With a lot of creativity and a whole lot of courage, which is exactly what it takes to perform for a room full of preschoolers as Jiggle Man. Imagine his surprise to learn that they're not the only ones impressed. A former late-night TV host also thought he was something.
It's a guy in an especially made ball.
That's right.
Bouncing up and down. I'm telling you, that's something.
David Letterman had Jiggle Man on his show 8 times, and Banks thinks he understands why.
When you see somebody do something that they're really happy doing, or they're really into it, I mean, this just makes you want to do it. It's kind of like laughter. If one person starts laughing, then you can't help but start laughing and then laughing, and everybody is laughing. And then I think when people see what I do, oh, my God, how can that guy do that?
He wasn't always so out there until one day everything changed.
I was in graduate school in my 20s, and I was about 6 months away from graduating, and my master's in sports nutrition, and the circus came into town, and they had an audition for Clown College, and as a whim, last minute, lunch break, went and auditioned, and I got in. And I think there was a little bit of resentment from my family of like, what the heck are you doing?
What the heck was he doing? And what can you do with a degree from Clown College? Well, he was one of only a few graduates selected to join the Ringling Brothers Circus. And with them, he traveled the U.S. and spent a year in Japan. After that, he found work at Universal Studios Florida, where for the next 10 years, he played the manic and mute Harpo Marx. Then he realized something. He'd spent years doing characters that did not speak, but there was a lot he wanted to say. And to do that, he found a way to make feature-length movies.
It got into like one film festival, and that was all it needed to me to go, I'm making my next one. So I made my next one, and that one got into no festival. I don't think so. And then I thought, I'm on the roll. I'm going to keep on making them. I love to.
And he has. Banks has become an independent filmmaker, a prolific one. He's already completed 8 films, with a 9th on the way.
Oh, boy. How would I describe them? I guess if the audience laughs, it's a comedy. If they if they cry, it's a drama. And if they walk out, it's a tragedy. And I've got all those, actually.
Mr. I always write my ending first, so I know exactly where I'm going. Doesn't have a damn ending?
What he has is an impressive body of independent work, all thought-provoking, and each one attempting to shed some light on what life is all about.
And then I did a film called Fat, Dumb, and Happy about a writer stuck in an unhappy family life and creates a world in his mind and falls in love with that family. Then I did one called The Odd Life, which was probably the most critically acclaimed film, which about a guy who meets himself at different stages in his life and kind of figures out that, hey, I can't do anything to change myself except for now. And that was the most critically acclaimed one that kind of did the best as far as in the festivals, and people that see it seem to like it the most.
Still, when you pour a year to 18 months of your life into each project, you'd like it to be widely seen. But it's tough to get into film festivals, something Banks has learned to accept.
Oh, wow. You know, I used to be frustrated with the first 7 times getting rejected. What? Frustration is only going to bring you down. I get frustrated for like 2 minutes, and now what I say is if I don't get a rejection every day, that I'm a failure. So, however, at some point, you realize it's the process and it's not the applause. I realize that I love this process. Writing is so rewarding. You create whatever you want to. So rewarding. And then when you see the finished product, by that time, I'm sick of it. You know, it's like a son who's 18. It's like, okay, time to get out of the house. I'm ready to write a new one.
So no, Banks has never had a normal job. But whether it's as a filmmaker or jiggle man or whatever else he comes up with, he is making a difference.
And that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to say, I'm going to do it my way. Here you go. So it's make them laugh, make them think, and connect with them.
Using his characters and his films, Banks shows us it's okay to take a different path in life, especially when you're creating a memory for others.
Which is, I think, might be what I do. I do stuff that no one else has the guts to do.
Can you imagine the nerve it took to be so close to a master's degree, only to turn your back on it and literally run away with a circus? His parents were in complete shock. And how about their conversations, Mark? How is your son, the sports nutritionist, doing? Oh, he's gone to clown college? Yeah, that's him in the photo, the one with the big red nose.
Yeah, but is there any measure more important than actually being happy in this? Parents could say, our son is truly happy. And you don't always see that in people unless they do have the courage like Banks and the conviction to take a risk and follow their passion. And anyone who finds a way to make feature films, in addition to the creative part, needs to be a great fundraiser, an organizer, a marketing specialist, a leader, and more. And best of all, his films are designed to get the viewer to think about their own life and to strive for something more. If you'd like to learn more about him, his films, and his amazing journey, just check out his website. It's BanksHelfrich.com. Up next, they were a big-time band back in the 60s. Wait until you hear what happened when they got back together in their 60s. This is Growing Bolder.
Sign up for the Growing Bolder Insider newsletter, delivered to your inbox every week. Be the first to see our latest interviews, stories, and tips for making each day count. Sign up today at growingbolder.com. Miss an episode of Growing Bolder Radio? Subscribe to our podcast and get it on your mobile device. Details at growingbolder.com/podcasts. Oh yeah, baby. Doing the Hump, the immortal plea from one of the hottest bands of 1963. I'm Bill Shaver with Mark Middleton, and this is Growing Bolder. And the band, I feel like Casey Kasem here, the band was the Invictas. And if that kind of beat brings you back to your youth, guess what? Just like a message from a time machine, the original Invictas are still together, still making music. And best of all, Mark, they're still doing the Hump.
Yeah, it's a great tune, but did you know that the Hump was actually a chart topper in many towns across the U.S. Well, not only that, but three of the four original band members are back together. They are still bringing their high-energy, over-the-top, blast-from-the-past type of rock to audiences everywhere. USA Today called them geezer rock at its finest, and Rolling Stone had nothing to say. But these guys are back because they love it, and so do many who miss that kind of groove. Do you know what day it is? It's Hump Day, because the Invictas lead singer, Herb Gross, joins us right now. Herb, how you doing, buddy?
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
Well, you know, we're thrilled that the Bad Boys of Rochester, New York are back. What took so long?
Well, you know, we all went off to college to get degrees, and we had to go make a living. And so we all went into our own businesses, if you will, and then got together again in 1980, and then again in 2005. We're back.
You know, the story of the Invictas is a cool one, too, Herb, because you had that super big hit we just heard, The Hump, and I understand that the title alone brought you guys to prominence because you were banned in Boston.
We were banned in Boston and had thousands of fans. They would mob us wherever we went. We had a blast.
You know, I heard a little bit off the top, but I got to hear more. Guys, play a little bit more of The Hump.
Hey! Everybody put their fingers in the air now.
Everybody put their fingers in the air now.
That's right. Everybody put their fingers in the air now.
Everybody put their fingers in the air now.
Herb, that's outrageous. In fact, I'm sorry we even started this. We are banning you from the Growing Bolder radio show to get you more publicity. That's the Invictas. We're talking with lead singer Herb Gross, who's still out there and touring. In fact, Herb, you guys are all in your 60s and older, and you're still doing The Hump?
Yes, we are. In fact, it's one of the favorite songs of the thousands of people that we play for every year.
You know, it's amazing. I can't get over the fact that that was banned in Boston. It really was probably the same era as Louie Louie. Remember when they wouldn't let us listen to that?
Yeah, are you sure it was the title or was it the fellas? They just, you know, were so outrageously, had such swagger out there.
I want to know which finger they were waving in the air.
Hey, that, you know, come on, Herb.
You know, so, Herb, you guys all have day jobs, grown children, bills to pay, a lot of responsibilities, certainly more than you did back in 63. How is it different this time around?
Well, I'll tell you, it's just as much fun as it was back then. I think the other thing is that our goal now is to entertain as many people as we possibly can, preferably thousands at a time, play with groups like the Beach Boys and others, and just rock as many people as we can, because as the guys in the band say, the window is closing.
Oh, do you feel that happening?
I don't, not yet.
And part of the reason, Mark, these guys in the 60s, they drove around, their band car was a hearse. Herb, you didn't recreate that, did you?
Oh, yes. I've got a 1983 Cadillac hearse that we store in a barn in upstate New York, and I brought it to Florida when we played in Florida, too.
Yeah, why fix what's not broken? You know, it works. You know, it's always interesting, a song like The Hump, you know, that has this cult following and we still love to groove to today. How does a song like that come together, Herb? Did you guys write it? Did someone bring it to you? What's the genesis of that groove?
I wrote the song. We were playing at a place called Tiny's Bengal Inn, which would have hundreds of people standing in line every night trying to get in. And there was a couple dancing in front of the stage rather provocatively. And I said to them, I said, "What are you doing?" They said, "We're humping." I said, "Okay, I like that." I then wrote a song, had it ready for the band to play in about a week.
Wow.
You know, Herb, I'm sure there are a lot of people that when they see you now, they didn't know about you back in the 60s, but they love you. They love what you're doing. They love what you stand for. Talk about the connection between music and our vitality.
Well, in my opinion, and I've talked with several booking agents, the first band that goes up to play for an audience sets the mood for the entire show. And so what our attitude is get them up, get them dancing, get them clapping their hands, get them singing along, and actually get the audience to participate with the band, and I'll tell you, we rock them.
So you guys are the leadoff group, and that makes great sense. Who comes to your shows these days, Herb? Are you attracting a younger audience as well as those of us who know you?
Well, it surprises us that there is a sprinkling of younger people in the audience, and some have never heard of the Invictus. But boy, once they hear that pounding, that real edge that we give rock and roll, 50s rock and roll, they love it. They think it's brand new music.
And what about you? What does it mean to you guys? You know, so many people, Herb, are returning to what they did in their youth to find fulfillment and passion and vitality in their lives. How does this feel to you to get to do what you did many years ago?
Well, it makes me feel like a kid again. And in fact, when I put the band back together in 2005, I said, okay, guys, the marketing concept, the whole concept of what we're doing is going to be called Rock Till You Drop. And it's all about attitude. It's about having fun, living your life to the fullest, following your passion, and making a lot of other people happy at the same time.
You know, Herb, I don't think anybody that was a member of a rock band back in the 60s minded the fact that there was such a thing as groupies, that the chicks dug it. What's it like being a rock star in your 60s? Do they still dig it?
Yeah. And in fact, you know, the ladies still look at you and, you know, you say, okay, I like that. That's okay. And most important is that the communication. And we make them feel like they're kids again, because when they're in front of us, whether we're playing at the Villages or whether we're playing on behalf of Wegmans Food Markets up in New York, I mean, we've got thousands of people. And as I said, they're all ages. There's some teenagers mixed in there. There's some folks in their 30s, 40s, 50s, and on up.
All right, Herb, I'm going to give you a chance to put a period on this thing. What would you say, and we heard a lot of cool things from you, but what is the overall message? What's the takeaway? What can we learn about life from your comeback, from the fact that you're still rocking, still touring, and still loving life?
Follow your passion, follow your dreams, and don't let your age get in the way. In fact, it can actually help you fulfill the dreams that you've always had. And when the time comes, you're going to go out with a smile.
Can you believe such poetry has come out of the same mouth that gave us the hump?
Let's do the hump.
Herb, you're amazing. Herb Gross, the original Invictus. Catch him coming to a town near you. Up next, did you like comedian George Carlin? Who didn't? Wait till you hear what his daughter has to say about growing up Carlin. This is Growing Bolder.
We've got news. Watch.growingbolder.com, the world's first streaming site for active adults, is now live. Growing Bolder TV shows, national specials, documentaries, and inspiring videos on ordinary people living extraordinary lives 24/7 on demand for free. Watch.growingbolder.com is now live.
Stand side in my hand at the mongrel dogs you teach.
Bill Schaefer and Mark Middleton here on Growing Bolder. If you've ever been, you know, overshadowed in your life or had parents or siblings or even a spouse that got all the attention, this is going to be a pretty interesting next few minutes for you.
Yeah, great point, Bill. Our next guest has struggled to find out just where she fits in, something we all go through. She is the only child of the comic legend George Carlin, and she's written a fascinating book about her journey to find her own identity as the daughter of one of the most brilliant entertainers of all time. The book is called A Carlin Home Companion, Growing Up with George. Let's find out more as we say hello to Kelly Carlin. Hey, Kelly, how are you?
I'm great. I'm so happy to be here.
I can't imagine you've always been able to say, I'm great, huh? And that's part of what this book is about.
Yes, this is exactly what this book is about. It's about, living through the difficult parts of time, making it to the other side, and then being able to share your story with the world to, help us all connect and remind ourselves that we're all human and we're all trying to figure this out. And, that if you keep your heart open and, keep walking forward, anything's possible.
And Kel, you know, it happens, but most of us don't get it because the first thought that comes to our mind is more like, are you kidding? How cool would it have been to have George Carlin as your dad? But you really, I mean, it wasn't, you were a great family, but you had horrible issues.
Well, yeah, and, but I don't find our issues to be very different than what a lot of people deal with, which is addiction. I mean, people, a lot of Americans struggle with this issue, and families do. And, so it's funny because, yeah, I had this really, really unique upbringing, and yet I feel like my story is in some way kind of an average American story. I mean, I think probably every single person is touched by addiction somewhere in their lives.
Yeah, you know what? I think that's not a bad point. I used to think I had the only family in America that wasn't dysfunctional until I got to a certain age and realized we were probably more dysfunctional than everybody. What was it like in your household? What was it like growing up with George Carlin? What was he unhappy? What was the genesis of his brilliance?
No, he was not unhappy. He was a man who loved his work, was in the joy of his work. My family's addiction problems aside, he was a man who was fed and driven by ideas. And, I mean, you could see that in the joy of his work. I mean, he was a humorist. He was a comedian. He was a man who ultimately saw the humor in the world and wanted to share that with everyone. And I think artists are on some level, have a skew towards being driven and slightly obsessed with their work. And that can create some difficulty for people. And like all artists, he had his issues with depression and stuff like that, and thus the addictions. It was a joy to be around my parents. When my parents were sober, it was the biggest joy in the world because they were smart and funny and insightful and wise and looked at the world through these, what I think were pretty amazing eyes.
And Kel, right through the book, it's, you can tell that you're a pretty amazing person, too. Let's share a little bit about who you are, too. You're in your 50s. You've already had several careers. You're a therapist, a scriptwriter, an author, a life coach. You've got a radio show on Sirius and several projects called Waking from the American Dream. What is that title about?
So that title originally was going to be a documentary that I wanted to do when my dad was still alive. And I wanted to go around and talk to people about, what it's like to step away from the mainstream and make different choices in your life, ones that are probably more fulfilling and adventurous and full of passion than, kind of just working for a company and just kind of doing what we're supposed to do until we, quote unquote, retire. And also I wanted to talk to spiritual leaders and people who were doing energy innovation. I just had this big vision for that. And then my dad died and the documentary got put on the back burner. And when podcasting became a thing, I decided to use the title to, to have those conversations that I wanted to have with those exact people. And the title itself was inspired by a bit my dad had done where he talked about how you know, you have to be asleep in order to believe in it. That's why it's called the American Dream. And so it's, you know, it's really about, it's very counterculture move, and not in the 1960s hippie way, but in the sense of how we can step away from the mainstream of what the culture tells us we're supposed to be, or who we're supposed to be at what age, and how we're supposed to operate in the world, and really step into full possibility and curiosity about life. And that's really what I'm all about. That's what all my work is about. It's why I went and got my master's in Jungian depth psychology. It's why I became a life coach and worked in leadership. And now I'm taking all of that schooling and understanding and perspective and pouring it into my writing and my performing and my speaking.
We're speaking with Kelly Carlin, the daughter of George Carlin, who, although she may not be as funny as her dad, certainly is as intelligent. You can hear that. You know, Kelly, I was thinking about your dad just the other day, wondering what social media would have done to his career, because he pops up everywhere. He's revered on social media, his quotes, his observations, his thoughts. It's almost a shame he's not around to take advantage of that today.
Well, you know, luckily for him, he wouldn't have needed to take advantage of it because he was already a legend. And you know, he was around at the beginning of it. YouTube had already been around and stuff. And he was, you know, allowing the world to have some of it for free and to experience him. But, you know, I think it would have been a double-edged sword with Dad. I think for sure, like, the Twitter would have been great for him because he would have loved the fact that it's like a haiku, like you have to fit it into 140 characters. But I think he also would have skewered all of us for this new world we live in. And I really, one of the things that aches my heart the most is that he's not doing a huge bit on social media in his next HBO show, you know, because I'd really love to hear his perspective on smartphones and social media and what it's all turned into, and what it's doing to our minds and to our, you know, connection to each other.
Kelly, the show here is called Growing Bolder. We always deal with people who are overcoming obstacles, trying to live their life to the fullest, not wanting to be a spectator anymore in life, but an active participant. Can you leave us with a takeaway in the last minute or so?
Oh, God, that's so great. I'm so glad you guys are doing this show. It's so beautiful. Yeah, you know what? Here's one of the biggest takeaways in my life. I was afraid to fail. I felt that if I failed, that it meant that I was not doing something right. And the thing I've learned in the last 10 years is that failing is essential in order to learn what you're really about and where you're really going. And so don't be afraid to fall on your face. Don't be afraid to get messy in life. I was afraid, and it kept me paralyzed and hidden in my house for 20 years. So go out there, fall down, get back up, brush yourself off, and take another step forward.
That's awesome. The book is called A Carlin Home Companion, Growing Up with George. I tell you what, we read the whole thing cover to cover. Not only did we always love George Carlin, but now we are huge fans of Kelly Carlin as well. Pick up the book. You can also find links to the podcast she was talking about, her radio show, and so much more by going to thekellycarlinsite.com. Great interview with Kelly. Thanks, Kel. Up next, we'll catch up with Sissy from the show Family Affair. Oh my gosh, who doesn't remember that? Kathy Garver will talk about her unusual career through Hollywood. This is Growing Bolder.
We've got news. Watch.growingbolder.com, the world's first streaming site for active adults, is now live. Growing Bolder TV shows, national specials, documentaries, and inspiring videos on ordinary people living extraordinary lives 24/7 on demand for free. Watch.growingbolder.com is now live.
Man, one of those themes so familiar that we grew up with. Anyone remember what it is? Bill Schaefer and Mark Middleton back with more Growing Bolder, ready to introduce you to someone we all grew up with, who has grown into an inspiring example of someone who has continued growing bolder throughout her lifelong career in Hollywood. You know her mostly as Sissy from the show Family Affair.
Love that theme. Not exactly the theme to the Kardashians, huh? So much more to tell about her. She has gone on to win two Lifetime Achievement Awards. She's won four Audies for spoken word audiobooks. She's still performing. She's the author of a brand new book, a great read, that's called Surviving Sissy, My Family Affair of Life in Hollywood. Let's say hello to Sissy, that is Kathy Garver. Hey, Kathy, how are you?
I'm doing well. And I love that introduction, and I have a lovely announcement to make that I just learned yesterday that I am the recipient of the People's Choice Award for my new book, Surviving Sissy, from the Scripps Foundation, Cincinnati Books on the Banks.
Well, congratulations. That's fabulous. It is a great book. And since you mentioned the title, Surviving Sissy, was it really a challenge? Was it really difficult? Was getting past that role something that you had to work on?
Well, Sissy, I kind of envision as an image of a lot of things to survive in Hollywood. It's a symbol almost of Hollywood. So trying to get beyond that and keep my feet on the ground and my head in the skies in a spirit took a little doing.
You know, Family Affair always kind of struck me as a little different, Kath. Maybe it was like Brian Keith's quiet style, or that he was like Uncle Bill raising three kids. But there was a real melancholy tone to the show, despite all the warmth. Do you think that kind of was partly what drew us in?
It could be. I must say, on this book tour that I am in now, and I've been signing books, and so many people have come up to me and tell me how much the show affected them. I've had people come up to me in tears and say I had an abusive childhood, and I would watch Family Affair, and I would be comforted by it. And I think part of that is because it was more of a dramedy than a comedy, and there was that underlying thread of melancholy and pathos because we were orphans, and Uncle Bill took us in. It wasn't like a single mom taking us, you know, after our father died. So I think that so many people identified with that perhaps dysfunctional family, but, you know, primarily with the emotion and love that was the basis of it.
Yeah, it is interesting, you know, different examples of the way people live their lives. There weren't a lot of them back then. And certainly, as you mentioned, Kathy, well, most people know you as Sissy from Family Affair. But you really had been acting before that. You made dozens of appearances in TVs and movies. How did you break into showbiz in the beginning?
I started acting. Actually, my first professional role was in The Night of the Hunter with Shelley Winters and Robert Mitchum and Lillian Gish, again, a whole roster of stars.
Wow.
And from there, I went to even more stars in The Ten Commandments with Cecil B. DeMille directing. And he noticed me after hordes of slaves and picked me right out and said, don't let that little girl's face get in the camera. And I said, who is that? Is that God? We are doing the Ten Commandments because it was way above me. But it wasn't God. It was Cecil B. DeMille, and he wrote special scenes into the movie for me with Charlton Heston.
On a movie set, he was God.
He was. He was a cinematic deity, for sure.
Talking with Kathy Garver, Sissy from Family Affair, and that show, Kath, we know was hit, you know, was not immune to the child star syndrome. What was it like for you to be a celebrity then, or how did you deal with the typecasting and wondering what was next when the series came to an end?
Well, my next book after Surviving Sissy is Ex-Child Stars, Where Are They Now? That will be out in March. And it is difficult for any, especially young person, to kind of deal with their next step on their road to life, and especially for child stars who then are let out perhaps of their child stardom when they're in their teens, which makes it even more difficult. I was able to survive that child stardom as well as Sissy by having a wonderful family, a great foundation, My parents didn't use me as a personal bank from which they could make withdrawals anytime they wanted for their own personal needs. I had a great education, graduated from UCLA, and I didn't take drugs.
You know, one of the great things about doing radio, Kathy, is that things come over the air that you can't get in TV. I mean, we can hear the passion in your voice. We can hear the excitement in your voice. We can hear the joy in your voice. We've had other actors on this program that have written a book that want to talk about it, but you genuinely seem to like where you are and who you are right now. How does your life today compare to your life 20 years ago?
Oh, I am so much more grounded. I have grown bolder. There have been some boulders in my life that are not like being bold, but kind of those rocks that you stumble over or have to climb over, or perhaps were going to come on my head. My husband died twice. That's in the book, and I had a fire, and there was a time in my life I said, gee, I'm not acting on camera. What else will I do? Developed a whole voiceover career. But at this point in my life, I am ecstatic. As old as I am, I have a 24-year-old son who is on his path, even though he is in his fifth year at a two-year college. I tried to explain to him that you're supposed to be out after 2 years, but he's now finally, I think, getting the concept. I'm, you know, now an award-winning author, I can announce. I have two movies coming up in 2016. I teach voiceover and try and get back some of the knowledge that I have gained over my life, and I just keep getting bolder every day, it seems.
Well, I'm going to push that point a little bit further, Kathy, because with all of our guests here, we like to see if we can come up with we can wrap a gift wrap and put in a box like a takeaway from each person. So you've had such an interesting life. What would you say Sissy or Kathy's message is? What's the takeaway from Kathy Garver?
Power of perseverance. Never give up. Follow your heart, and just know that life goes in cycles. Some of those cycles are down, but then keep remembering that what goes down comes back up, and embrace every single minute. Instead of carpe diem, it's carpe minute, and just be joyful for every minute that you are here.
I mean, it's a great message, Kathy, and when somebody like you spreads that and isn't afraid to stand up and put your life out there for people to read, warts and all, it kind of shows us that our problems may not be as big as they seem, and they are overcomable. The book is called Surviving Sissy, My Family Affair of Life in Hollywood by the delightful Kathy Garver. And if you'd like to learn more about what she's been through and where she's going and what's coming out next, go to KathyGarver.com. Well, that's it for now, but remember, growing bolder does not stop here. The only thing that should stop is you being a spectator in your own life. So today's takeaway, take charge, break the routine, live like your time is precious, because it sure is. Don't live just to work. You and all the people who you love are important in your life. Do the things that make you happy, that you have a talent for, that fascinate you. Live your life to the fullest like there's no tomorrow, and discover the joy in growing bolder.
Check us out online, growingbolder.com, and our Facebook page as well, and we'll look for you right back here next time.
The Growing Bolder Radio Show is a production of Growing Bolder, LLC, all rights reserved. This program was recorded at Growing Bolder Studios in Orlando and is available as a weekly podcast on NPR One, iTunes, Spotify, and TuneIn. It is written and produced by Jill Middleton, Mark Middleton, and Bill Schaefer. Technical director is Jason Morrow. Production manager is Michael Nanis. Chief audio engineer is Mac Dula. And our most important team member, you. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram to keep growing bolder every day.
Crimson flames tied through my ears, flowing high and mighty trapped. Countless fire and flaming road, using ideas as my maps. We'll meet on edges soon, said I. So much older than
rascal I dream. Romantic flanks of musketeers, foundation deep somehow. Oh, but I was so much older then, I'm younger than that now. Hear the soldiers dance, I aim my hand at the mongrel dogs who teach. Fearing not, I'd become my enemy in the instant that I preach. Sisters fled by confusion boats, mutiny from stern to bow. Ah, but I was so much older then, I'm younger than that now. Deceived me into thinking I had something